When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, so she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner." Jesus answered him, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more?" Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven." "You have judged correctly," Jesus said. Then he turned towards the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not pour oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little." Then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." The other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." There are some people, maybe I'm one of them, that you quite like, but you really wouldn't like to invite them round for the day. You wouldn't like to invite them round for the day because it's a bit awkward, and you especially wouldn't like to invite them round for the day if you've got other guests. Because you have no clue what they might say, and you know they're a bit prone to saying things that are a bit awkward. We have an expression that they don't have a filter. Jesus was one of those kind of people. If you think about nearly all the meals that Jesus is involved in, there's stuff going on. I'm sure he had a few uneventful meals where they sat around with their Rice Krispies and didn't talk for a little while or something, but mostly I think it was exciting but also a bit scary having Jesus around for a meal. Whether it was the story that he told, whether it was the teaching that he gave, whether it was the sin that he pointed out, whether it was the action that he took, the person that he healed, there was always something going on when Jesus was around for lunch. Maybe an argument that broke out, maybe a person that came in, maybe something went wrong and some things went right, but it was never dull. So maybe you wouldn't want Jesus in your home, but actually maybe you would want Jesus in your home. Because although it was quite exciting and dramatic at times, he always tells the truth, even when it's uncomfortable. But the truth he tells always brings hope. That's what we see in this dinner story here. Let's look at what actually happens. First of all, there's a dinner invitation, verse 36. A Pharisee, who we get to know later is called Simon, invites Jesus to dinner. And if you think about it, if you've been following along in Luke's gospel so far, it's a pretty bold move really, isn't it? Pharisees don't like Jesus. The Pharisees are opposing, they're hostile to Jesus. The Pharisees will eventually be involved in the death of Jesus. So pretty bold move to invite Jesus to your house if you're a Pharisee. So it seems like there is some curiosity in Simon. He is a bit interested, he is a bit unsure. And Jesus, we're told, reclined at table. And that's an expression for the fact that he almost certainly would have been lying on a couch or leaning on a couch. It was a tradition that wasn't there originally. In kind of Jewish culture, they would maybe just sit on the floor. Or if you were at the king's table, you might sit up on a chair or something, but generally on the floor. But there was a Roman custom that had come in, which meant they would sit around on couches, kind of heads to heads, and feet sort of going away from their heads, as it were, if you can imagine that. Some of you know that position of lying on the couch, eating, maybe. And because they were in that slightly unusual to us position of having a meal together, we would generally sit up at a table to have meals together at least, wouldn't we? Because they were in that position, it made it possible for people to come and go and for this lady to enter, as she does in just a moment. It's worth just saying in passing that it would seem that Jesus never passes up the opportunity to have a nice meal, does he? Jesus always seems to embrace those things. Although he talks about greed, although he talks about life doesn't consist of the things that we can amass around themselves and so forth, but in the goodness of God his Father, when there was opportunity to eat lovely food, he ate, didn't he, and enjoyed it. There's something about that for us, that we embrace the good things that God has given us. If it's legitimate for us to enjoy them, and we're not doing that at the expense of others or to the humiliation of others, we enjoy things. We enjoy a slap-up meal. We enjoy going to our favourite restaurants. We enjoy cooking stir-fry or bolognese or that's the only ones I can do. The other wonderful meals that some of you can cook. We enjoy the luxury of the fat that's on the lamb until we get indigestion later. We enjoy all those things because they're from the hand of God. And Jesus does that. And meals, as we'll think about a little bit later, are a wonderful way to have fellowship and to express love to one another. And then we have this despised intruder, verses 37 through to 39. And here's where things start to go wrong. Verse 37, a woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. This is when it gets a bit awkward. Enter a so-called sinful woman. A sinful woman. She was clearly a notorious sinner. There was something public about her sin. It was well known, as we'll read later from what Simon says. It was well known that she was a sinner. It should have been known by Jesus that here was a sinner. Most likely, because of the way it's described, she was a prostitute. We're not explicitly told that, but it's most likely to be that kind of a public, notorious sin. And because of the layout, it was possible for her to enter. I have an open door policy in my house. I don't know if you do. It's quite a good thing to do. Maybe not through the night, but generally speaking, it's a good thing if you've got a door that works for that. And these kind of houses, though, would be sort of super open door policy places where people could come and go and there were servants coming and go and so forth. So in that sort of environment where you didn't have to kind of ring a doorbell and make it past a butler or something, you could sneak in. And that's what the woman does. And because of the way that Jesus is positioned and the other guests, she's able to get access, as it were, to his feet. And she stands and she cries a lot. And she pours perfume on his feet and she wipes his feet with her hair. And you're thinking, that's a bit weird. And Simon's thinking, that's a bit weird. It's outrageous. The thing is, though, he's not thinking, that's a bit weird, for the same reason you're thinking, that's a bit weird. He's thinking, this is outrageously weird. Doesn't he know what kind of a woman she is? There's nothing so strange about crying, happens in that culture. There's nothing so strange about anointing someone's feet and kissing them. Those sort of things happened in that culture. It was something you did for a dinner guest. So it's not that that outrages Simon. If it had been someone else, he probably wouldn't have been weirded out at all. But he's really uncomfortable about it because of the kind of woman she is and because of the fact that Jesus really ought to have known. He says, verse 39, doesn't he? Look at it. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, said in his heart, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him, what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner. So Simon's conclusion from that was, this is not really the prophet. I was curious, I was interested, I invited him around my house, but now he's shown me for definite, he's not the Messiah. He's not a great prophet. Because otherwise he wouldn't have done something so outrageous as this. And then we have this story about debts forgiven, verses 40 through to 43. Jesus, as he does, knows what Simon is thinking. He knows what Simon is thinking in his heart, what Simon is saying to himself. And sometimes he does choose to confront that, like he does here. And he does it with a powerful story. He kind of gently reels Simon in, says, I've got something to tell you. And Simon says, tell me. He's interested. Jesus was respected as some kind of a rabbi. So he says, tell me, teacher. And Jesus tells this very simple, straightforward story of a money lender who lends someone a lot of money, more than a year's wages, and who lends someone a little amount of money, maybe about a month's wages, something like that. And he lets them both off. And Jesus asks a really straightforward question. Who's going to appreciate the money lender's forgiveness, the money lender forgiving the debt? Who's going to forgive that money lender? Who's going to love that money lender more? And Simon, just like you would if you were asked, you'd give the obvious answer, wouldn't you? You say, well, the one who'd been forgiven the bigger debt, the one who had a whole year's salary or more forgiven, is going to love the money lender a bit more than the one who had just a month's salary forgiven. And Jesus says to Simon, which is encouraging as far as it goes, you have answered correctly. See that in the end of verse 43. And you have to feel a little bit sorry for Simon, because you feel like he's kind of given an answer, he's been told it's the right answer, and he's thinking kind of, phew, sorted. But then Jesus addresses him, doesn't he? And he talks about a deep love, verses 44 through to 50, a deep love. Jesus looks at the woman, but he's speaking to Simon. He's looking at the woman to draw attention to her as he's about to speak about her. And he speaks to Simon, probably for everybody to be able to hear. And he basically says this. This sinful woman was the perfect host that you were not. This woman you despise was the perfect host that you were not. And I'm going to tell you why. He says, you didn't give me any water. And yet she has cried all her tears on me. You weren't a good host in that sense. Good host would have provided water for washing of the feet. You didn't kiss me. That would have been normal custom. You think about the end of the book of Romans where it says, greet one another with a holy kiss. It would have been customary for men and women to kiss each other as a normal greeting. It says, you didn't kiss me, but she hasn't ceased from kissing me, kissing my feet. Sign of affection, but at the same time, great humility. You didn't give me any oil. Again, it would have been customary in that hot climate to, as well as offering washing the feet, offering some kind of perfume to your guests. But Simon has not done that. But he says, she has poured perfume on my feet. It would have been an alabaster jar, as happens a bit later in Jesus' life before his death. It would have been an expensive jar of perfume. So the woman had been the perfect host that Simon was not. We don't know whether Simon purposely didn't do that for Jesus. He was curious, but he didn't want to treat Jesus as an honoured guest. That's possible. Or somehow or other it just got neglected. But however it was, he did not provide the hosting that he should have done, whereas the woman made up for that. But here's the thing. Jesus isn't teaching about hosting. It's good to be a good host. It's good to welcome people in your homes and take their coat and shake their hands and greet them with a kiss or whatever it is you want to do and provide them with some nice food. And if they're hot and dusty and dry as they arrive, you can wash their feet. But Jesus isn't teaching about that. He's not giving some sort of, you know, practical advice. Here's a kind of a workshop in how to be a good host. Because he goes on to talk about the motivation, doesn't he? So verse 47, he says, "Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little, loves little." What Jesus is saying is this. This notorious sinner has been forgiven her sins. She's obviously had some encounter with Jesus in the past. So Jesus talks in the past about her approaching for forgiveness of her sins, her sinful life, and she has known forgiveness of that. And what she is doing now, says Jesus, in this providing the host services that you didn't provide, what she's doing is she's expressing in a deep and very public way the love poured out as a response to the forgiveness she's received. She's showing how much she appreciates what has happened to her. And to make it really clear, Jesus says her sins have been forgiven. And of course, the guests are rather outraged by that. We don't know what Simon thinks, but the guests at least are outraged that Jesus would even claim to have the authority to pronounce someone free of sin. But of course, he does. She's believed, she's saved, she's sent on her way in peace. So we have that conclusion in verse 50. Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." What a great thing to hear from Jesus. Your faith has saved you. And there's no kind of picture or image here. She's not like she's been healed from an illness and the salvation is spiritual as well. It's clear what salvation for her means. It means she's forgiven. She's now at peace. She's at peace with herself. She's at peace with God. Jesus is able to declare that. Now, I don't know. I wonder what happened next. Do you wonder what happened next? What conversation followed as they're coming out with the coffee and the mints and stuff? What did they say? I think Luke purposely doesn't tell us. What happens with Simon? It appears he's not one of the guests who starts complaining about Jesus' words that he has authority to forgive sins, but we don't know what he did think. And I think Luke does that on purpose to kind of put it out there for you to say, where are you in this story? Are you with the woman? Are you with Simon? I want us to think just about two areas where there's things that we can learn from this text. The first is this: Jesus can forgive anyone. Jesus can forgive anyone. Or to put it another way, whoever you are, whatever you've done, whatever kind of lifestyle you've led up to this point, however notorious your sin, or secret and hidden, however bad you think you are, Jesus welcomes you. You see, in the church, there are no unwelcome guests. In the real church, everyone is invited. There are no special seats. There are no special places. There is no hierarchy in that sense. There's no waiting room. Everybody is welcome. Whatever you've done, whoever you are, wherever you've been, whatever you thought, however you've acted. I was speaking with someone this week who said what quite a lot of people say when they first come into the church, especially if they're not Christians, that they come in and they look around and they basically think, you're all sorted. They think I'm sorted. They think you're sorted. They think you don't sin anymore. And they feel often quite unworthy, spiritually, emotionally, intellectually. They don't know as much about God. They haven't got it all sorted. Their lives are not sorted. And if you're someone who feels a bit like that this morning, be assured, you are most welcome. Not only is it not true that everyone else is sorted, as we'll think about in a minute, but more than that, whether it's true that you're a notorious sinner, whether there truly are things that you would be ashamed of, maybe ashamed to talk about, you are most welcome by Jesus and most welcome in this church and in the true church wherever it meets. Maybe some of you do feel like this woman. Maybe you feel that your life is so shameful, you just want to come in and kind of keep your head down because you feel like you're a sinner like this. And you do need to realize your sin, just like this woman. She clearly understood that there were wrong things in her life. She wasn't casual and complacent about it. She wasn't bold about her sin. No, no, no. She realized she was a sinner, but she understood that Jesus had forgiven her. And you need to realize that this morning. Because when you come to Jesus, all your shame, all your guilt is put away. You come with your sin, you come with your shame, and you leave, as it were, with righteousness, goodness, cleanness, wholeness, new life. So you are welcome to come to Jesus. The only qualification is to feel the need for him. It's a great hymn that has a line, all the fitness, in other words, all the suitability that you require is to feel your need of him. That's all Jesus asks you to do, to just own who you are and to come to him and ask for his grace and mercy. So you are welcome. But it's also true that everyone is welcome, which is a lesson for us as a church to learn, isn't it? I was talking to Jim Partridge a couple of weeks ago from the King's Church in Mid-Sussex, and he was mentioning that they've just got a few issues at the moment with shouters. We haven't got any shouters at the moment in the meeting, have we? No! And that's always awkward when you get someone who comes in the church and starts kind of shouting at the preacher. It's always a bit awkward, more awkward for the congregation from the preacher normally, but normally it can't go on for very long because it just doesn't work having a sort of conversation with somebody like that. But he was just saying how the whole congregation gets extraordinarily tense. You know, you've got kind of 300 people just willing this person to leave the room. And he said, I've been trying to teach through that okay, we've got to work out a management process with this, but as a philosophy, as a kind of approach, we want to welcome everybody. We want everyone to feel welcome and that they can be with us. And not feel like, well, we only want the people who are going to behave who are going to show up. We want people that are kind of, you know, three quarters there in terms of respect for God and God's people, and they know when to sit down and stand up and when not to speak, you know. And that's a lesson for us, isn't it? I'm not saying we don't need to manage those systems, and neither was Jim Partridge saying that you can't, you just kind of need a riot every time. But it's the attitude behind it, isn't it? Do you welcome, would you welcome anyone into this church? The Pharisees used invitations as a kind of social tool. It's kind of an honour for Jesus in some way to be invited, although he wasn't treated so well perhaps when he came. But maybe that's part of what he felt and experienced. Just as a test of whether you're welcoming to sinners in general, are you welcoming to people in your home? Are you hospitable? It's always impressed so strongly on me that hospitality is like a fundamental characteristic of God, because he welcomes us into his house even though we're unworthy. And every time you welcome someone into your home, in a way you're modeling what God is like. He welcomes the foreigners, he welcomes the strangers. That's where our word hospitality comes from, welcoming strangers into your house. I'm sure lots of you welcome your close friends into your house and welcome your family around to your house. But as a kind of a sign and a signal of whether you want to welcome all people to hear the gospel, do you welcome lots of people into your home? There are single people in the church who perhaps don't get invited around so much. There might be young single people, there might be older single people. There are people who don't get out very much at all, who would just love to be invited. There are people who are not in your current circle of friends. There are new people in the church. Many of you have got an adequate number of friends, if I could say that. So you probably don't need it for your own reason. You don't need to start up new friendships, but other people may not have. Do you welcome people into your homes as a sign that you want to be like Jesus? So Jesus can forgive everyone, anyone. You are welcome. If you're a sinner this morning, you are so welcome to come to Jesus and be forgiven. But the fact that Jesus is like that is a model for us to say in our church, in our lives, in all kinds of ways, including our hospitality, we want to show that we want to welcome people to hear about Jesus. So that's the first lesson from this text. The second one is like this. It's a bit of a mouthful, but I think you get the idea. The more we appreciate forgiveness, the more we want to love and serve Jesus. I guess that's the big lesson, which is why I've kind of ended on it. That's the big lesson of this text. The more that we appreciate forgiveness, the more we love and serve Jesus. It's very easy when you first look at this text to think, what it's doing, it's teaching us there's a whole kind of different league table of how much people love Jesus. And it goes like this, you know, those that haven't been forgiven very much, those that have basically been fairly good, they don't love Jesus very much. And those that have been notorious sinners, they're right up the top and they love Jesus a lot. And maybe when you first kind of glance and read that text, you think, that's what it's saying. But that's not what it's saying. It would be rather strange, abhorrent idea about kind of scales of love based on how much of a sinner you are. The lesson is not that really bad sinners love Jesus a lot. You see, the problem for the Pharisees, and Simon included, he looked down on this woman when compared to him, he thought she was a notorious sinner and he was not. And the point is that he didn't appreciate forgiveness because he thought he didn't need it. And that's the point of the story. We need to appreciate how much we have been forgiven. And that is what will help us love Jesus more and serve him. The issue wasn't a more notorious sinner will love more. The issue is a self-righteous person who thinks they're too good to be forgiven or to need forgiveness, a self-righteous person who thinks they're so good won't love and appreciate Jesus much. And that's the whole point of the story. The Pharisees didn't realize that in their hearts they were just as bad as this woman. There were all kinds of influences on their life that have perhaps restrained them from sinning quite the same way, but in their hearts they were just as rebellious and just as in need of forgiveness. And Jesus is saying, when you really appreciate your needs and when you really appreciate what Jesus has done for you, you can't stop the outflowing of love that comes as a result. And so, if you're a Christian here this morning, you need to appreciate how much forgiveness means for you. You need to appreciate the debt that you have been forgiven. You need to reflect perhaps on your week or your life and to think of all the moments when you've distorted the truth and all the moments when you've wanted things that weren't yours and all the moments when you've committed adultery in your heart or in fact. Or all the moments that you've watched and you've read or you've said things that you shouldn't have watched or read or said. All the times that you've slandered your neighbour. All the times that you've talked religion but have lived just hatred and worship of the devil. When you've worshipped created things rather than the creator. And you consider all of those things And then you look at Jesus on the cross and you look at him with his outstretched arms dying there, and you look at the bill, the letter above him, the notice above him that reads, this is the charge against Jesus. And you see all those things, your sins listed there on the cross as he dies for you in your place. And you appreciate that and you look at him and you say, this is my sin that's being dealt with. And then you want to find some feet to kiss. Because you really appreciate it. You're not wandering around saying, hum ho, that's interesting. Might read a book on it one day. Think I'll go to church a bit. You're thinking, this is extraordinary love for me. I've been forgiven so much. And so I really want to love Jesus. I really want to love Jesus. I really want to serve Jesus. I really want to make Jesus welcome in my life. I really want to do everything to make him comfortable. I really want to give over my life to him. There's a massive debt that I've been forgiven, so there's a massive debt I owe, the debt of love to him. I don't cry much, so maybe I can't cry. And I haven't got much hair, so I can't wipe Jesus' feet with my hair. I've got some Lynx Africa, so I've got the perfume. But you see, the point is not, shall we be like the woman in that literal sense. The point is this, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because if you really appreciate what Jesus has done to forgive you, you want to express it. He's not here. He's not physically here. But how are you going to express it in your life? How are you going to show that? If you've been forgiven much, and we all have been forgiven much, then you will love much. Do you love Jesus? And can you imagine for a moment, can you imagine a church where people love Jesus that much? Wouldn't it be a great church? And God's helped us over the years to appreciate a bit more, perhaps each year, the debt of love that we owe, but how much more we could appreciate it. And what a fantastic witness that would be. If there were a whole load of people, all of you, in your attitude, just like this woman, forgiven much, loving much, serving much, that would be revolutionary. And so we pray God to give us a bigger, greater, vast appreciation of the height and depth of the love of God. And that's our prayer as we look at that text.